Welcome to Day Zero Update for July 9th, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
And I'm Brandon Perkins.
Yeah, two-man crew this week, which is also indicative of just how much there is to really talk about this week.
Yeah.
Because the July 4th holiday here in the U.S. seemed to just kill any sort of news-making opportunities, really.
Pretty much.
There's just not a ton here. We got a couple dates for things that are happening, but, you know, nothing really amazing here. That's, you know, I had to work hard to get extra stories on this of notes.
Yeah.
But we do have plenty of games to talk about this week. But we'll get to that here in a sec. Yeah. What I've been playing, there's Dave the Diver, one of the recent Steam releases. That came out a few weeks ago, came out of early access. As you can probably guess, you're playing a diver named Dave, who's been roped into this whole money-making scheme in this part of the ocean called the Giant Blue Hole. Mm-hmm. That just involves, you know, the sea underneath, just, I guess, in a very roguelike kind of fashion, changes its layouts every time you go down. I don't know that it's truly unique every single time, because it very much seems like it's a lot of similar pieces getting placed together, maybe in different ways, but they do have, you know, certain landmarks that need to be in there. Mm-hmm. And that kind of stuff that you need to be able to get to for certain quests that you get, and that is an important thing, as well as, you know, there's certain fish and sharks and such that show up at different parts of the map. So they kind of keep certain things available. Most runs, though, sometimes I'm assuming that some of the fish and other life under there that may not be available at all times for that. So that's a neat thing. So you're a diver that's essentially fishing to get fish for, you know, a sushi restaurant. Mm-hmm. That's set up shop here, and sort of initially they get messed up by some big, like, earthquake or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So initially you kind of start off with a very limited audience, though. Yeah. At the point I'm at, we've reopened fully. And to the degree that we are getting some VIPs every once in a while that have specific dishes they want, so we have to make sure to go and catch the specific type of fish or jellyfish or shark or whatever sort of meat they want for their sushi kind of thing to do that. So you get two sessions a day, a morning and afternoon session to go down and fish and complete quests and whatnot. And as you go along, your phone gets apps unlocked that can add more stuff to do or more things to craft. I have, you know, a weapons app that I can craft new weapons from, but you have to find those weapons down in the blue hole every two or three times each to unlock the blueprint. So there's some limitations on that stuff, though. So far, some of the weapon drops you can get. So initially, you're dealing with a harpoon gun to fish with, you know, a totally normal way to fish in the ocean. And eventually you get the weapon app where you get like a very basic kind of rifle to use down there. You have a secondary items thing to use, which is nothing really amazing there. You can kind of get some boosters for your speed. They're just like little, you know, those little like manned, those like a mechanical boost that you can ride around in the water kind of stuff. You can get that as well as some stuff that boosts your, refills your oxygen meter, that kind of stuff. And then you have a melee weapon, which you initially start with a knife, but you can find stuff down in the blue hole that's like a, well, here's a bat, or you know, an old Japanese sword or, you know, some kettle prod type stuff. A lot of weird stuff that you can get. So far, I have not found a way to get that stuff for unlock so that I can just equip it up, you know, up front, but I'm assuming that may come at some point. As there's a lot to unlock. You know, I got an app that's for like eco-friendly people. It's like, oh, go and grab, you know, 5 of this kind of starfish and, you know, 5 of this kind of shells, or, you know, these are hazardous life, you know, poisonous jellyfish or type of fish that, you know, are kind of hazardous to other life forms in the water, that kind of stuff that you're asked to go and kill a bunch of them, that kind of stuff. The annoying thing is that the main quest stuff can show up on the side of the screen to remind you what you need to do, but those kind of quests in the apps, you just have to remember it. But I guess on Steam, I can use the notes to kind of make that easier. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, I've just been kind of trying to remember, like, wait, which kind of starfish do I need? Which kind of shells? What am I looking for specifically? And kind of wasting my time gathering certain things that I don't need. But for the most part, I don't think you're really ever getting into any sort of situation of really wasting your time, because even in those kind of situations, you're still going after fish and that kind of stuff to use in your restaurant. So the third part of your day in the evening, you go back to the restaurant and you kind of help man the bar as people show up and order stuff. And I'm kind of starting to get, they introduce like a whole staffing mechanic where you can put up, you know, flyers to hire people, and I have one person, and I just had my first day where we could not keep up with all the orders coming in, that kind of thing. So I have to look into hiring some more people to cook and take stuff out. Though your character, once things are kind of going well, your character is mainly tasked with pouring tea for people, which you use like the right stick. Just pull it down to pour the tea up to a certain point, and you're also washing dishes at certain points as well, refilling the wasabi occasionally through there. Then all has like weird little mini games to them. The wasabi, you're kind of pushing the right stick up to kind of make more of it in that mini game. The dishes are like mashing the right and left triggers. This game's kind of full of that kind of stuff of mashing buttons and such. In the fishing stuff, it's kind of really annoying. There's no like accessibility options. Some of the fishing types you do, you have to just sit here and mash a button, not to fill up a meter. You have to keep it above a certain line for however long it lasts before it lets you, you know, just catch it, that kind of thing. Then you get to ones that make you, you know, mash the stick back and forth. What else I've been getting? Some that ask you to press like specific buttons to catch the thing. There's some that, you know, like electric weapons I've had where it wants me to sit here and like hit the button as like a charge is filling up to kind of add the most charge to my meter for whatever it is. It's like a lot of little mini game type stuff that is neat and can be fun, but also, you know, playing on a Steam Deck, I don't want to sit here and be mashing buttons constantly and potentially damaging it in a sense for just one game that doesn't seem to have any accessibility options. All it has in like the settings are just audio stuff and, you know, resolution, and that's about it. So hopefully they add that stuff, but I was kind of just surprised to see like a big indie game coming out that people are raving about and seeing like, oh, there's no accessibility for any of these like mashing minigame stuff. It's been a while since I've played a game that has that kind of focus on a lot of its mechanics to that, that doesn't have any sort of means of mitigating it to a degree. But still liking that game a lot. It also gets pretty weird as you have like an early encounter with like a giant squid. Mm-hmm. And there's also the notion of like one of the people who gives you quests is a doctor named Dr. Bacon who asks you to investigate the potential rumors of sea people, you know, people that live under the sea kind of stuff. And as you deal with that, you know, there's a lot of weird stuff going on with that. And you make some friends with some dolphins, a blue one and a pink one, that are getting hunted by poachers, that kind of stuff. It has plenty of like fun and silly stuff in it as well. For that, that's makes it a very fun game. So I'm definitely going to keep playing some more of that, but I'm looking forward to some updates to make it a little bit of a better game around that. But that's been Dave the Diver. I think it's $20 on Steam right now. I assume it'll come to the consoles at some point. But yeah, there's that. There's Kingdom 80s. I've beaten that game. Enjoyed it a lot. It's not too long of a game for the campaign. I've probably beaten about like six or seven hours like that. The impression I got that the sort of dumpster siege mechanic only going one direction ended up not being correct, though I didn't find out about that until the end of I beat the game. So I decided to restart the game on a new save. It gave me three saves to do stuff on. And so I started a new save to start the campaign on the next hardest difficulty. I think it's just called hard. I think there's one on the top called like crushing or something like that. Enjoying that. I just finished up the first stage on that. Definitely took a bit longer. Like the first episode on the normal difficulty took me like 10 days and this took me like 30. So got over to the one area, found a thing that I didn't know what to do with. There wasn't any prompts for that. A little bit weird, but still liking that a lot. Probably put some more time into it and try and get some of the other achievements I haven't gotten yet. So there's that. I've been playing some more Final Fantasy 16. About like 12 hours into that, I have done the big accept your fate part of that game. That has been the source of some memes out there, as there's a whole thing going on there with that. So kind of accepted Clive's fate and kind of moved on from the things that had been weighing him down for much of his life. And so now we're kind of onto the big revelation that's happened of about the fate of the world. And then we're going to go deal with that. But along the way, they opened up a new person in the hideaway that whose literal job is just to give you an easy way to find all the side quests. I'm going to let you literally warp to the area where they're at kind of stuff. So been doing some of that, which the side quests are side quests. They just want you to go to a place, collect some stuff, or go to another place and kill some enemies. Nothing really complicated for that. So there's that. Let's see, for the other stuff that I've been playing. Did a stream yesterday Friday, with some simulators I saw that were on the PlayStation Plus extra tier. And I was like, I want to check those out. I have been meaning to. The second one I checked out was Bus Simulator 21 Next Stop, which is the next-gen version of Bus Simulator 21. So they have spent some extra time to, maybe improve the visuals a little bit, but it also includes a lot of haptic feedback stuff on the DualSense. So like if you run over potholes, you kind of feel big bumps on the controller kind of stuff. Same with some of the sidewalks and tram tracks kind of stuff that's on there. As they have two main maps to start with. There's one that's a European map, maybe the UK, I don't know. And one that is an American city called Angel Shores, that I think is largely like San Francisco, Oakland, kind of Bay Area stuff. As some of the buildings I saw seem familiar from what I've seen of San Francisco. But either way, you kind of go through, I'm going through like the story mode on that. And I can see why this is a game that has not really caught on, because it's not very well polished. Frequently, even on a PS5, like, has a lot of performance issues, and I'm in the performance mode for it, and it also is just not very good. Driving around, having issues like pedestrians just deciding to run across the street in the middle of traffic, and then you get penalized for hitting pedestrians, that kind of stuff. A lot of weird stuff like that. The controls are fairly complicated in that you can pull up a big wheel of the various things you can do on your bus that, you know, your bus, you kind of have to do what they call kneeling, which sort of lowers the side of it so that it makes it a bit easier for people to get onto it. But you also have a ramp for wheelchair people to get on. And you're also supposed to hit like certain lights before you pull up to a bus stop, and when you go away from a bus stop, and all this, and it's a lot to think about, even in the early parts of the campaign, as you know, they're introducing you to all this stuff, and it's mostly fine for that. But yeah, just the game itself just isn't very good. They give you like a little tutorial person that's running you through how to control the bus and do all this stuff. And she's just, it's not well written. I noticed a lot of text in the game that's just not well written for English. So I assume the devs are not English speaking devs or not native English speaking devs. There are a lot of like typos and such in there that's kind of stuck out, but you know, it's on PlayStation Plus Extra, so you can check it out for yourself. Seems pretty decent for what it is, but yeah, it doesn't really compare to even on PC stuff like the American and Euro Truck Simulator games that all control really well, and you know, you have a lot of stuff you can do for controlling different parts of your truck, but what you need really mapped to like a controller for that stuff is not really all that much, especially because they have things for like tapping and holding down different actions you can map to that. But that's Bus Simulator 21. That one's, it's more of a game to play to goof on and that kind of stuff. The other game is 100 Days Winemaking Simulator. This is one that's seems fairly in depth for the typical sort of vineyard winemaking process, though it's very clear that this is originally a PC game, because the interface and all that is very much designed like a PC game, with elements to click on all around the screen that's trying to move around with it on a controller just doesn't move around as well as you would like. You're not controlling a cursor. It's more of like a traditional just highlighting elements. So getting around can kind of be a little bit of a chore. And because it's also a PC game, they don't necessarily tutorialize things super well as far as like explaining what these different elements mean. And there's things that seem to, they have some like shortcuts to the journal that's telling you different bits of information that just stays on there for longer than it feels like it should. It feels like if you click on a thing, it just tells you a little bit of information. It should just go away and let you just go back to the journal if you want later. But, you know, that's it's not too big of a deal, because once you get, 20, 30 minutes in and sort of make your first batch of wine, you start to kind of get the hang of it. The neat thing is that when you're getting to, like, important decision-making points of the process, you're kind of laying down these kind of Tetris piece style versions of these events on this like grid. And as you get more money coming in from sales of wine and all that, you can use that to spend on expanding it so you can have more stuff in there. And those events that you're doing or objectives you're completing are, you know, usually have like one, two, or three on it for how many days it takes to complete. And they keep the process pretty quick because it's 5 days per season. So 5 days in spring and summer, autumn and winter, that kind of stuff. And you're kind of doing the different things there as you go. I don't know if it's, if the 100 days is sort of based on, 5 years, or if it's just a name for the thing, but it's got a very kind of Stardew Valley kind of story to it, where you're a person that's working in an office that gets a letter from a dude that is like, you know, it's my time to retire from the winemaking business. And instead of, you know, selling it to or giving it to, you know, somebody in the area, I'm telling them all to fuck off and I'm giving it to you, kind of thing. And so you're just this newcomer that's coming into the, the area and taking over this vineyard, and then, you know, getting some people that know what they're doing to kind of teach you the entire process of doing different things. And so, yeah, even to get to the points of where you are, you know, deciding like how much to press the grapes to raise, you know, different stats about the wine, as well as, you know, how you deal with the other parts of making the actual wine and how that affects the process and all that kind of stuff. So it's really neat, kind of interesting to learn more about all that process there, because it's a lot more complicated than just like the old, like, I Love Lucy episode. Yeah. Where they're just stomping on the grapes kind of thing. Yeah. Obviously, they've made a lot of machines since then that can do a lot of this stuff more finely. So you're not dealing with, you know, just some very kind of crude matters, means of, you know, making wine, that kind of stuff. So it's a really neat thing. For people that are kind of interested in that, kind of a little bit of a tycoon meets a simulator kind of thing there. So that's also on PlayStation Plus Extra. So that one's probably the one that's worth checking out of the two.
All right.
But yeah, that's pretty much what I've been playing. So Brandon, how about you?
All right. Well, as for me, I played and finished Trails into Reverie. And yeah, I really liked that game. I liked it a lot. It actually did like a lot of focus on stuff that, like, it didn't really focus a whole lot on like constantly having to buy new equipment for your party. You can just go and to like a lot of places and just upgrade it as far as you want, or just, you know, make new equipment wholesale and strengthen it as well. It also, you know, really did tie up a lot of loose ends that Cold Steel 4 left. But probably the one thing more than anything else I love about this game, and there's a lot I love about this game, is the fact that it is the genuine conclusion to the Erebonian arc of the game. The true ending to the game, actually, you can only get it after you've completed the Reverie Garden, which is, you know, the area that sort of acts like, you know, the towers or the mansion from Cold Steel 1, where all of the, you know, where you can go in and sort of, you know, increase your levels and get some rare loot every so often, you know, stuff like that. And it ends with probably the hardest boss in the entire game. It's literally like a giant whale with like a Greek temple on its back. I think it's supposed to be like reminiscent of like the dream fish from Link's Awakening. But once you finish it, you get an item which you can then take back to the main hub area of the Reverie Garden, of the Reverie Corridor called the Garden, and you will get the true ending to the game, and basically ties in into what the overall sort of plot of what the next arc in the game, which is going to take place in Calvard, is about. But basically, you finally do get a chance to see the Grandmaster of Ouroboros, and from her appearance, I'm going to, and her voice, I'm going to take a lot of, take a kind of a guess here and say that she's probably related to, like, Emma and, you know, the other witches, especially because she has, like, crimson red eyes, which, you know, some of the others do. So, and she ends up talking to, well, I'm not going to spoil that part, but let's just say it does directly tie into what's going to be happening in the first Calvard game. And honestly, I can't wait until that particular, that first game of that series gets, you know, made into something we can finally play over here, because all the stuff I've been reading about Calvard online, it just makes it incredibly fascinating. But other than that, I've also been playing Street Fighter VI. And yeah, just absolutely love it. I love the fact that Capcom had the, honestly, kind of the audacity to sort of throw aside the old sort of fighting game canon where, you know, it made the genre so opaque to newcomers where you have to learn these complicated button combinations to pull off special moves. Instead, they give you a choice between classic mode, which is, you know, like that, or modern mode where you can, you know, it simplifies the special moves, what it takes to do them, much easier. And yet, it does not hurt the challenge of the game at all. It is, you know, if you are good at Street Fighter, it doesn't matter which type of mode you use, you will still thrive and get your ass kicked by better players. It's absolutely going to happen. And it's also made me realize, like, how so many fighting game bros really are kind of like, they just aren't good at the game, or at least not as good as they think they are, simply because they exploited the sort of the OG sort of version of how you play these games. And now that they are actually having to go up against, like, a new demographic of players with a different control scheme, they suddenly feel like, you know, the game has, they've made the game too easy. It really hasn't. The game is still, can still be very difficult. But also, I'm just loving the world tour mode as well, where, you know, you're doing all this stuff in Metro City, you know, the setting for Final Fight. And you even run into, like, Final Fight characters. Thrasher Damed from the very first Final Fight game, the first boss you run into, he's in there. He's actually one of the guys you get missions from. You'll also run into some original characters. You'll also run into the classics, like Blanca and Chun-Li. And you don't just stay in Metro City. You also end up going to, you know, all the other stages that are in the game. You can go to Italy, to the Coliseum, you can go to the East End in London, you can go to, you know, Blanca's famous stage where, you know, it's with the hut, with the wood thatch roof huts, and the snake in the tree, and all that stuff. And also, I think probably what I really love about this game is the fact that it finally seems like all the classic cast of Street Fighter are finally able to, like, move on with their lives. Like, take Chun-Li, for example. Chun-Li has basically been made it her life's mission to kill M. Bison, basically, from Street Fighter 2 all the way up to Street Fighter 5. And every ending that happens with her in Street Fighter up until this point has been her killing Bison, mourning her father, and then being able to throw off her uniform and just live life as a regular girl. Now she's actually done that. You know, Bison is gone. He's more than likely not coming back. And she's actually, like, she's taken in a girl named Lei Fen, who is also one of her students, and she teaches Kung Fu to beginners in Metro City's Chinatown. It's actually kind of neat, you know. Ryu is still Ryu because, you know, he is the wandering fighting hobo. That's that dude. And Blanca is, like, a tour guide now in Brazil. Like, he helps people tour the jungle, so he's not just, you know, the crazy green gorilla dude. And it's also really kind of setting up for, like, what the next generation of fighters is going to be. And I really like that. But, yeah, that's what I've been playing.
All right. So, yeah, let's get to some news.
All right.
What news we do have. But it's time for the next couple of weeks of Game Pass stuff.
Yep.
As we've got a few things here. Nothing really too overwhelming here, but available as of this moment. There's Grand Theft Auto 5, console only. Includes both the Xbox One and the Series X and S versions. So you'll be able to play that probably for a few months until they take it back down. There you go for that. There's also Sword and Fairy Together Forever. That is available now. This is one of the Chinese RPG series that's been going on for a bit. Has had some of the last few entries come over here to the West in and localized as well. So this is one of the latest ones here. I believe published by East Asia Soft, who did the published the Soldier X games and the other games from that developer. So they've branched out a bit to publish a bunch of indie stuff here and there, especially a lot of the hentai stuff that's been on the Switch for the last few years. So there's that. Also available now for console and PC, McPixel 3. This is a great little WarioWare meets MacGyver-esque kind of game where you're dealing with McPixel, kind of constantly getting into these you need to do something to save the day kind of events where, and you might be on a train and you're like, have to figure out like, oh, how do I get to, you know, stop this train kind of thing. You go around, like try things, and one might involve him like jumping out of the train and like running faster than try and stop it himself. Like he's Superman, but he's not. So he just runs him off a cliff kind of thing. And you know, you're trying all these different little things that yeah, either humorous failures or humorous successes.
Yeah.
Kind of stuff. And you're kind of tasked with trying to find all of them in each area kind of thing, which is just a fun time to do there. So definitely recommend checking that out. If you like smaller games to just do lots of little, weird little stuff.
Yeah.
I think one of them, I think it's in this one where there's like, oh, here's a fire going on. And so he ends up, fire in the forest. Kind of thing, and ends up going to a nearby house and ends up filling it up with pee and causes an explosion that just soaks the entire forest in his urine, and that's how you get the fire out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a totally logical way of doing that. But let's see, the stuff that's coming up here in the near future on July 11th, so that'd be Tuesday, Commonhood for console and PC. This is a squatter settlement simulation game. Okay, I see, a base building kind of game. Gather salvage materials, grow your own food, research new technology, craft new tools, and build a new home. So one of those kind of games.
Yeah.
Let's see, July 11th. Yeah, also for the PC only, Insurgency Sandstorm. This game has been on Steam for a while. That's supposed to be what if somebody made SOCOM, you know, nowadays. That kind of game.
Yeah.
Co-op and PvP modes. So one of those things, if you want to check that out on the 14th, which I believe is Friday. Exoprimal will finally be out on Game Pass, as this is the latest Capcom multiplayer game and the latest of these like co-op PvE PvP kind of games that they get there on day one that like the others have not really gone anywhere too much, like Rainbow Six Siege, Rainbow Six, I forget the name even at this point. That came out like beginning of last year, 2022, and the fact that I can't remember the name of the game says a lot. But this one seems at least have a pretty solid core of, you know, you kind of join a group of, I think, five people that don these different suits to tackle these hordes of dinosaurs that are just spawned out of the air from this weird portal orb thing. As you're completing these objectives throughout the map, that usually ends at a point where you're taking on the other team to see who ultimately wins the match. And there's some others that take on some match types that come out of like a TF2 or an Overwatch, where you have like a payload that you're trying to gets from one end of the map to the other, and you're trying to fight, you know, dinosaurs and the other team to get it over there, that kind of stuff, with all the kind of unlocks and all that kind of stuff that you would expect out of this. So could be an all right game. I just don't know that it's going to be a big hit for very long. So we'll see how that goes, but that's also on PlayStation and PC as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it does have cross play, but I think it doesn't have cross platform groups, parties. So your ability to play with friends is a little bit hampered if you're not all on the same system for that game. So there you go for that. That's on Friday.
Yeah.
On the 18th, so that'll be next Tuesday after this one coming up. Tectonica goes into game preview on Game Pass for console and PC. This is definitely one of those big survival exploration crafting kind of games where you can do it alone or work with some friends to do a lot of automation of your factories and production, gathering resources, researching technologies, building out the area to make room for more, you know, production lines and all that kind of stuff, establish a base and find out the secrets of the world. That kind of stuff has a neat look to it as you're sort of underground in this, in a world, in a alien planet kind of thing. So that looks neat. The other one, console only, The Cave, on July 18th. So that is the one of the more recent games from Ron Gilbert, this time working with Double Fine on that. A really cool kind of platforming adventure game. As you're sort of assembling a team of three unlikely adventurers out of seven, and sort of using their unique skills and personalities to go through the cave and see what happens in there. So you kind of get some cool variances between the different groups and all that kind of stuff. So has a lot of vibes of like the Monkey Island stuff, because I think there's even like a merch area, that kind of stuff about the cave. Kind of the way you do get in the some of the Monkey Island stuff, that's pretty fun. So that's one that's worth checking out. But that's pretty much it for Game Pass. Nothing else really here as far as I can see. So yeah, that's it. So some solid stuff there. But let's see, for some dates for stuff. Coming out on the 12th, which I think is Wednesday. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe Booster Course Wave 5 pack finally comes out on July 12th. So that'll include, let's see, tracks Athens Dash from Mario Kart Tour, Daisy Cruiser from Double Dash, Moonview Highway from Wii, Squeaky Clean Sprint is a brand new one, Los Angeles Laps from Tour, Sunset Wilds from Super Circuit, Koopa Cape from Wii, and Vancouver Velocity from Tour are all the tracks that are going to be in there. I believe it also includes, Comic, Birdo, Petey Piranha, and Wiggler as new characters. Some of which are returning from some of the other games for that. I think they're all from different games. I forget which ones. But that's neat. $25 for the booster course pass for all of it, or if you have Nintendo Switch Online Plus expansion pack, you get it included for free. Check out all those new tracks. So, yeah, there you go. Some neat stuff there. Happening on the 13th, so that's Friday. Or not Friday, Thursday. Naraka Blade Point finally goes free to play, as it's also launching on PS5 that day, to go with the Xbox One and PC versions. And that's a fairly popular free-to-play battle royale that is more styled like an action game. With all the mechanics that you'd expect out of that, as you are sort of exploring the area, running around, finding enemies, and getting into a fight as you try to dodge their attacks and get your own in, that kind of stuff. It's been paid for the past couple of years that it's been in Early Access and on Xbox and all that. So they're finally going free to play. So you don't have to put any money down to check it out. So that's cool.
Yeah.
It seems like there will be some bonus PlayStation stuff on that game for skins and such. So if you want to play it there, you get some bonus freebie stuff.
Yeah.
For that. So yeah, that's one that's probably worth checking out if you want something that's a little bit different from the myriad of other battle royales out there.
Oh yeah.
So there you go for that. Next up here for people like Brandon that have Street Fighter VI, the next DLC character, Rasheed, is going to be out July 24th. Part of the year one character pass.
Yep.
Or part of the deluxe edition or ultimate edition if you have those as well. But they are letting people try Rasheed out for 1 hour. With one rental fighter ticket. So that's an interesting thing. Obtainable via the in-game fighting pass. That's which one was Rasheed in? Was he in 5 or was he in 4?
Yeah, he was from 5. Yeah.
Okay.
He is one of the new guys. And he was fun because he was a character. He was like the first character from the United Arab Emirates. And, you know, they could have gone like super, stereotypical with it, but they instead decided to make him like a tech bro. So it's like, actually a character.
Yeah. Although I've seen people that are Muslim talking about the announcement for this character, the date for this, where the way they format his name on that stuff kind of makes it look like Arabic. And it just says Rasheed in that kind of style, but if you know your Arabic, that's not what that style looks like.
Nope.
It says something different.
Yeah.
Depending on how you want to translate it, but like it was something like lazy mom, like that, where it's like, you know, you could just written Rasheed. You don't have to go super weird with it, or written his name properly in Arabic. Seems to suggest they probably don't have any Muslim people on the staff.
Probably.
That wouldn't be a huge surprise since you follow people like Rami Ismail on Twitter. He'll highlight this stuff every once in a while when he sees it.
Yeah.
I'm like, you just need somebody that knows this stuff to tell you that this is stupid the way you're writing it. But all these corporations don't care.
Nope.
So they just do what it looks like to them. And then they say, that says things that they don't, you know, intend. And then you got a whoopsie on your hand. So there you go for that. And the last date I have here is for a game called Marble It Up Ultra. It's coming to everything, basically, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC on August 17th. This is a game that comes from the lineage of games like Marble, the original game was Marble It Up, but from Marble Blast Ultra, a very popular kind of marble platforming game that was on like XBLA and PC and that kind of stuff. And I've seen that one on PC. It just essentially stopped working at a certain point on like Windows 10. So they essentially reverse engineered it and made like a, you know, an open source version of it that ended up getting used in speedruns for that version on, you know, Summer Game Fest or Summer Games Done Quick, that kind of those kind of shows. That looked really cool the way they did it there. So this looks neat. Another one of these games that does not happen very often. It looks really cool. So looking forward to that. In August, another game to throw on the pile of August releases.
Yep.
So there you go on that. And that's it for games with dates. We got a couple other things here. fresh off of announcing a date for Pixel Junk Scrappers Deluxe. Last week, Q Games also announced that they are releasing Pixel Junk Eden 2, which would have only been on the Switch eShop at this point for the past 2 years? Three years. December 10th, 2020. It's been on there since then. They're releasing it on PS5, PS4, and PC.
Yep.
For more people to check it out. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. I like the game on the Switch. It's a little bit different in that it's very clearly like a mobile style game originally. Because you run into these kind of spices that you can use to increase different abilities in the game for your next run kind of stuff, which is like, I guess I just like the chill exploration of the original game kind of stuff. But it'll still be a really fun game, especially having that in 4K.
Yeah.
Which makes me want them to bring the original to like PS5, PS4 and whatnot. There you go for that. Another thing got announced, this had been kind of weeded out in some data mining stuff, but they finally announced it. AEW Fight Forever is getting a new mode in the near future called Stadium Stampede.
Awesome.
It's an actual Battle Royale mode, and not Battle Royale as in like the Royal Rumble. Mm-hmm. Battle Royale as in like, you know, PUBG, Fortnite kind of thing, where these wrestlers start in different parts of this arena, like a football field.
Uh-huh.
I think it's modeled off of the Jacksonville Jaguars stadium because the owner of the AEW is the son of the owner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Gotcha.
So they've done matches in that stadium before. So it's wrestlers. If you watch the gameplay of it, as they fight each other throughout this, you know, stadium, you know, busting down chairs and the seating and railings and all this kind of stuff as they fight their way into the middle of the arena to where there's a ring and all sorts of chaos and all that kind of stuff. They can fight each other with chairs and t-shirt guns and I guess Molotov cocktails. Ride a horse in because why not? All that kind of stuff. So the last wrestler standing wins, and then it looks like it's going to be a fun mess.
Oh, yeah.
So, there you go. Something to look forward to for that game.
Yep.
No dates, just sometime soon.
All right. All righty then.
And, let's see. Next up here, more Street Fighter VI news. They have reached 2 million sales worldwide about a month after launch. So, that's pretty good news. Good start for that game.
Uh-huh.
And trying to see... Launched June 2nd, been about a month as of, I think, July 7th, whenever this news was, sometime earlier this week. But they've done a good job kind of getting the word out there, making it pretty accessible for people to check out for that. So definitely doing a good job on that front.
Right.
As they're working towards, you know, getting the Pro Tour stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
As I think they're going to be doing a big thing at Evo and having like one of the biggest prize pools they've ever had for Street Fighter tournaments. So
yeah,
they're doing some good stuff there.
Yeah.
But let's get to some unfortunate news.
Yeah.
The creative director of Beyond Good and Evil 2, Emil Morel, has died at age 40.
Yeah.
Very young, unfortunately.
Yeah.
As people found this out through posts on LinkedIn from other devs at the studio.
Yeah.
Talking about this, and yeah, it definitely seems like it was a sudden passing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, all the good wishes to the family
and
friends and coworkers and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But you've been at Ubisoft.
Yeah, I'm legitimately wondering if this game is a curse or something, because this game has been in development hell for almost a decade now, and probably even longer than that, and we've not gotten any gameplay or anything like that. And it's just like, yeah, something is going on in Ubisoft that is preventing this game from really sort of coming into coalescence, because I don't know. And, you know, we found out that, you know, Beyond Good and Evil's original creator was like a sex pest, and all the stuff we found out about the working environment in Ubisoft, and it's just, God.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy's been at Ubisoft since
2009.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, worked on, what was it, Rayman Legends? Mm-hmm. Was a combat designer there. Working on some cool stuff at Ubisoft, and yeah, unfortunately has passed way too young.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, there you go for that unfortunate news.
Yeah.
To some more positive unfortunate news, I guess.
Yeah.
Sega has announced that they are largely done with blockchain games.
Uh-huh.
Are there plans for blockchain games? As who was it here? This is their original announcement. Co-chief operating officer Shuji Utsumi has said the company will now withhold its biggest franchises from third-party blockchain gaming projects to avoid devaluing its content. Uh-huh. Will also be shelving plans to develop its own games in that genre, at least for now. We are looking into whether this technology is really going to take off in this industry after all.
Mm-hmm.
Adding that while its biggest franchises are off the table, lesser-known projects like Three Kingdoms and Virtual uh-huh. Fighter will still be seeing some NFT tie-ins, albeit from third-party partners. But the most important quote here is where he just says, "The action in play-to-earn games is boring. What's the point if games are no fun?"
And I mean, it's like, he's right.
Yeah, but it's like, everybody told you this back when you guys announced you were jumping into it.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, well, we told you. Tried to warn you. So, yeah, there you go. That's Sega's not going to waste any more time or money on Web3 games. Blockchain games, any of that shit. So good.
Uh-huh.
That's good news.
Yeah.
Another Sega news, more exciting, is a huge treasure trove of Sega documents from the 90s have leaked and surfaced on the web, particularly at the site Sega Retro.
Uh-huh.
That has sort of put up a huge, like, 240-page document or a 40-page PDF of documents here, including a lot of like emails and sales stuff and all this kind of stuff to it. You know, like one here that is a Sega of America corporate memorandum saying about the Saturn. For a commercial that they were working on for the Saturn in 96. Uh-huh. $249 price must be added visually and verbally.
Yeah.
Time committed to game footage seems to have decreased. We need 50% of time on footage. The quality of footage is also crucial. Isn't this to be on VF2 and Panzer Dragoon 2? Who is selecting scenes? And let's see, the last one here. Again, since we know Nintendo is going to position into Nintendo 64 as the ultimate game machine, shouldn't we preempt that claim?
Yeah.
And if you know your Sega history, Sega of America and Sega of Japan did not get along all the time. The people running those...
I would argue they didn't really get along at all, really.
It was very much the American group wanted Sega of Japan to like really give them control over messaging and all that in the U.S. As they, you know, were Americans and they could tell them what they were doing wrong versus, you know, forcing them to bring out the Sega CD and the 32X and all this stuff to devalue what they were doing well with the Genesis.
Yeah.
And this is some cool stuff here.
Yeah. And there's also points where it's like, oh, so this is Yuji Naka's, like, actual character. Because he basically, there's a point where, like, a couple of American executives decided to focus group to try and sort of, like, get their opinion on, like, what they want a Sega console and Sega games to be like. And Yuji Naka is basically claiming, like, this is all staged. It's all phony. And so one of the dudes is like, can you please ask the interpreter to tell Yuji Naka to shut the hell up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, let's see here.
Definitely a lot of things suddenly make sense, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, there's one here. It's about, you know, issues that must be addressed to help ensure we meet business plan objectives. Like,
yeah,
talking about when they should be releasing games where, like, you know, why are we releasing World Series Baseball in August when it should be out in June, in the middle of the season? Mm-hmm. You know, the Sonic game at that time aimed for November. What about October 20th? Yeah. That kind of stuff.
If you remember famously, like, that particular Sonic game, like, Sonic basically did not have, like, a legit entry in the Sega Saturn franchise, in the Sega Saturn. It had, you know, was supposed to have, you know, Sega X, and that ended up becoming like a anthology game with like a that used like the guts of it to sort of simulate this 3D runaround thing. And it suddenly realized like, wow, a lot of these games were in development hell for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. There's even one here. It's a fun email from Tom Kalinske. Internally writing about the Sega Saturn versus the PlayStation in Japan, which is saying things like, here, it is one thing to hear slash read about how well we are doing in Japan versus Sony. It's another to personally witness it. I just visited 10 retail stores in Tokyo, most in Akihabara. It's now spring break, so the crowds of teens slash college kids are huge. We are killing Sony. In every store, Saturn hardware is sold out, and there are stacks of PlayStations. Retailers commented they can't compare the true sales rate because Saturn sells out before they can measure accurately. Our interactive displays are better, our software displays and a stocking are far superior. It's not unusual to see 40 to 50 copies of Panzer's Way or Virtua Fighter 2 stocked in even small stores, and they are selling fast. I wish I could get all our staff, salespeople, retailers, analysts, media, etc., to see and understand what's happening in Japan. They would then understand why we will win here in the U.S. eventually. How do we show that at E3? And I'm going to guess this is right before, like, Final Fantasy VII and Crash Bandicoot and some of that stuff came out to really swing the tide to the PlayStation's favor.
Yeah, basically. It's like when you realize that, you know, a lot of this stuff is from, like, 1996 and that they would be out of the console game completely in about 5 years. So
it's kind of a fun timing for this stuff. Trying to scroll through this PDF a little bit here. Yeah, a lot of data here. Yeah, that email about how they're doing against Sony in Japan. So March 28th, 1996.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you guys got a good attitude at least.
Yeah.
It didn't really translate to the games.
Yeah, the thing is, about a year later, Final Fantasy VII dropped and basically ate their lunch, basically.
It's a whole thing there.
Yep.
As if you did not know, like, even some of the iconic PlayStation brand games came out on Saturn first, like Tomb Raider.
Yep.
Which is like, okay. Like, Symphony of the Night also came out on Saturn. That kind of stuff where it's like, you hear that and you're like, wait, how did PlayStation just kill them on this stuff? And it's like, because they were better platforms up front there at that point.
Yeah.
People already had the PlayStation because there was, you know, Crash Bandicoot, Spyro the Dragon, Final Fantasy VII, Tekken, all this stuff on it. That's, you know, you could be a Saturn person, but you were kind of, you know, waiting for your morsels to drop every so often.
Oh, yeah.
Especially after they launched it at, what is it, $3.99 they launched at? Or was it $2.99?
I don't remember.
I think it was $2.99 maybe, or $3.99, but PlayStation came in and dropped it right under them.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And there's things here about, like, we need to drop some prices because, you know, that's a whole big issue here. Yeah, you know, like, one here about their business plan for fiscal year 97. And talking about PlayStation pricing $249 with software at E3, $199 core sometime in the fall. Retailer margin maximum of 10% on core, 15% on pack-in.
Mm-hmm.
Nintendo 64 was not out yet at this point. We're talking about competitive requirements for different things here. And it's like, okay, this is all neat for how they needed to go with this stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's that whole thing. That's some neat amount of documents to go look through and see, like, what they were thinking and doing here, because this was the pivotal time of Sega trying to get off on a good start with, you know, Sony and Nintendo, as they wanted to get out ahead of them, which they did.
Yep.
But it didn't really help them at all, because they had hardware that wasn't great compared to those two.
Yeah.
They didn't have the games for the most part.
Nope.
There were a couple of things that were interesting, but nothing that really sold it to the average person. You know, there wasn't a great Sonic the Hedgehog game or anything like that on there, which was a killer for them.
Yeah.
And yeah, Sony came out, just wiped the floor with them, and unfortunately Sega fanboys to blame Sony for that, and it's like, no, that was all Sega killing themselves with the 32X and the Sega CD.
Mm-hmm.
They were bleeding profusely by the time they got to the Dreamcast, and they needed a miracle to save the company as a hardware platform. And Dreamcast did well, but not good enough. And that wasn't Sony's doing. That was Sega of Japan and America kind of just attacking each other throughout and hampering one another's business. Yeah, I think the Saturn did pretty all right in Japan, but in the West, it did not do very well.
Yeah, that's partly because, like, Virtua Fighter really is like an institution over there. But yeah, Sega, the Saturn just never was able to catch on over here.
Yeah.
Just wouldn't happen.
So much so, I don't know that I knew anybody that had a Saturn.
Nope. I knew somebody, but they were very much one in a million.
Yeah, I might have known one person, but we never really used it.
Yeah.
So that's not good for Sega's sake on that front. So
yeah.
There you go. I think that's going to end up doing it for the show this week. Thank you, Brandon, for joining.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news, and hopefully as July kind of hits its midway points, we will have a better slate of news, and with no holidays happening there, that should hopefully be a much easier ask. I know we had that ID at Xbox showcase happening here later this week, so might get some news out of that. So yeah, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy the show, if you let friends of Bambino know and select strangers, that's also thought the Sega fucked it up with the Saturn. Thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.